Hello there. I'm PJ.
And I'm Kara.
And this is What the
Parent,
brought to you by school, the place where we want all of our kids to be all day long.
Yes.
Not here with us.
Oh my gosh. Please, please, please. Ooh, fall 2021.
I mean,
in person school, please.
We want them to be educated. We want their bright, young, beautiful minds to be expanded and filled with all kinds of glories and history and wonderful things that education has to offer. I just want them out of the house.
I know. What are they going to tell their, this is what I want to, are they going to tell their kids, yeah, it's a terrible winter of 2020 and we had to roll out of bed in our pajamas and turn on our computers to school. We had to walk 3 feet.
Yeah. You know where they say absence makes the heart fonder?
Yes.
I want some absence. I don't
My
know.
My heart could grow so fond.
I could be so much more fond of these kids if they weren't here all the time.
Yes. Like many of you, we've had open school, closed school, open, it's closed, open, closed, open, closed. It's going open. Oh, it's closed. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot. It's a lot. Of course, love the kids. They're great. They're
fantastic kids.
Oh my God, they're super. But, you know.
But yeah, I mean, if you were going to, if I were a virtual, I was a good kid too. I was an A student when I was
of
a
course
kid.
You were.
Of course of I was. Of course you were. A student. If I were going to virtual school, yeah. Would I like not pay attention, be on my phone sometimes? Yes.
I was a letter student. You were
I got a letter. Actually, you did get letters
I get lots
in
of letters
the mail.
To my mom. Saying, where's your kid?
Yeah, your mom didn't get the call. Your mom got the certified letter in the mail. She got the mail. And you were at the mailbox ready.
I was.
For that little envelope.
Trying to hide them.
Stuffing them in the bushes.
It wasn't PJ missed this assignment. It was PJ has missed all of his assignments.
Yes. We haven't seen him in weeks.
Has he been abducted?
Okay? Is he okay? We're not sure.
You're still paying the tuition. Where is he? So, yeah. Good times.
Oh, school. So, speaking of school, today we have someone running for our local school board.
She
is freaking amazing.
She is, actually. She is. She's wonderful. Miss Anjali Bhardwaj.
Yes.
She is. She's really kicking butt and taking names. She is running for a school board that, as an Indian American.
Yes.
Right. She's her parents are from India, but she's born here in the US. It'll be the first time in at least recent memory.
If not for all time.
We don't know that for a fact, but right. At least for recent memory, at least 20 years when our local school board has not had any kind of representation outside of Caucasian.
Yeah, it's terrible. Don't even get me started.
This would be...
It's literally terrible. What is this 2021 or 1821? Well, I don't know what's going on.
Very true. So this would be awesome. It would be awesome for her. She's super smart. Actually,
yes,
Kara,
yes. She graduated with honors from the Illinois Institute of Technology with a BS in computer engineering. So already she's good at math. I'm not. Let's just get that out there right now.
How do you spell math?
I know. 1 + 1 = 5. Mother of three, she runs a local nonprofit group called Kids for Peace. She's the co-president for the Chicago chapter of Women in Technology. So kick butt. She just kicks butt. She created the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Advisory Council for District 200 to ensure every child has a sense of belonging. It's so important now.
Wow.
I mean, really, it really is super important. She's doing fantastic work.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's cool. I mean, you know, school boards... DE&I is clearly a big subject these days,
as it should be,
and
all days.
Well, yes. of course, it's top of mind as you guys will learn. You know, she's not doing this just to be a groundbreaker or really. DE&I is one of the reasons why she's running for school board, and so it's kind of cool to just hear her story, hear her perspectives on things.
Yeah,
but you know. DE&I is super important these days. Doesn't matter what race you are, what ethnicity, what sexual orientation you are. Everyone deserves to be heard and everyone deserves to be represented. And, you know, I don't care who it is.
Yeah. No one should feel like an outsider.
Correct. Correct. And, you know, in my standards or in my perspective, I don't have to agree with everyone, but that doesn't mean that that they shouldn't be heard, or that they should be, you know, cast in the shadows, because that's not right either. So
yeah,
it's refreshing. I'm excited about it. I'm really pulling for her, and I hope that I hope she gets on.
Oh yeah, she's great. And you'll hear too just how important education was in her family, and how she really wants to run to improve the curriculum. I mean, really, that's her main reason for running.
Absolutely.
And how important that is. And really, you know, we joke about wanting to get our kids out of the house and to school, but you know, we have faith that the schools are good in
absolutely.
Our neighborhoods and want them to be even better. And that's what she's trying to do.
Yep. And for those of you in District 200, get out and vote April 6th.
April 6th.
Get out and vote. Brad Paulson's running again for president, and awesome guy.
Good man.
Oh, super guy. Great family. And, Anjali would be a
fantastic addition.
A great addition. So,
so smart. So insightful.
Yes.
You'll see.
Absolutely. Well, you'll hear. You can't see.
Oh, true.
It's just a podcast, babe.
True. You'll hear and imagine in your mind.
We're not doing the whole YouTube thing because that's just creepy. But podcast, here we go. Hope you guys enjoy. Here's our chat with Miss Anjali Bardwa. And it is our esteemed pleasure to have Miss Anjali Bahardwa here today with us. She is a fantastic citizen of District 200, bringing to light a very important initiative that is really, truly top of mind, of course, over the last year, but it should have been top of mind forever. Really,
should have been, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Melting Pot of America, which is about diversity, equity, and inclusion. So Anjali, welcome.
Yeah, welcome, Anjali.
Thanks, guys. I'm happy to be here.
Great.
We're super excited to have you here.
Yeah, well, let's start. Just tell us a little about your family and, your parenting style. I mean, I like to be super empathetic. My husband, PJ, of course, is more like brute force. He's like, not really an authoritarian. He likes to be one.
I like the sound of that.
I know. He does. But how would you, let's talk about your family and your parenting style.
Yeah, so I'm probably more on board with PJ, to be quite honest.
Yes!
He's like, yes, someone in my quarter.
Yep, so I have three kids. I have Avani, she's my oldest. She's a freshman at South. And then I have my second daughter, Aria. She's a seventh grader at Edison. Mm-hmm. And then I have my youngest little guy who just had a birthday yesterday. He just turned seven. And he is a first grader at Madison. So that is my family. I obviously am married to a wonderful husband as well, Andre, who has been picking up a lot of slack recently as I've been so busy, as you guys have been talking about.
Absolutely.
But I'm so grateful that he's able to pick up the slack. But I'm definitely the enforcer. I am somebody that is no nonsense. I'm very, very strict about education, as you guys talked about. So, you know, academics are always first in our family. If there's anything else that is deviating from that, then, you know, like lay down the law and make sure that we put, put our education first. I would also say that, I don't know if this is a good or a bad thing, but the majority of my kids' friends are pretty scared of me.
That's actually a great thing.
That's a good thing.
They know that I won't let them get away with, any nonsense over here. I can even tell you a story if you guys like.
Please.
Yeah, so one of the first times we had my daughter have a sleepover, I think she had probably like 10 girls or so. I know that they have a tendency to just like stay up. And so I think they were around 8 or 9, something like that. So I ended up taking the baby monitor and putting it downstairs where they were sleeping. And I'm like, look, you guys better go to bed. I'm watching you. And they were all terrified. And they all went to bed.
That's a good trick.
Maybe I should
try that.
So I actually have a quick question. So, of course, you know, Kara is half Asian. She's half Japanese. I'm quarter Asian, quarter Chinese. Know all about the tiger mom. Right. Know all about the emphasis on education. You are South Asian Indian. And is that also from Indian culture? Is that also a large focus in the family is education?
I mean, it's definitely the focus in my family. So I would say in particular, it comes from my grandma. My grandma was a follower of Gandhi, actually. And she had a PhD. She taught Sanskrit. She was just very strict on making sure education always comes first. I will also say that our faith is actually also based on education, right? Like education is what's going to propel you forward. You know, that is what's going to bring you out from, you know, if you think about in India, people, there's a caste system known. And so in my faith in particular, they believe that education is what will lift you from one caste to the other.
Oh, wow. So we're That's
very,
wonderful.
Yeah, we're very, very focused on education in our family. And I, you know, I also believe with a lot of the people that have come and immigrated from India to the United States, you know, obviously immigrated because they were like well-educated and that's how they got their ability to come here.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
Is it when you say education, you're just talking general education or is there a focus areas, math, science, you know, other areas of expertise?
So we joke a lot that, you know, Indian parents will only want their children to be doctors and engineers.
Sure. Like my parents, same.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can't lie. I have said that. you know, the time I've probably grown over the last, I don't know, let's call it 10 years and have been open to other areas of academics or areas of career focus instead. I guess my big thing is just making sure that they can succeed financially as well as do what they like. So, sure. You know, but it's definitely, I mean, there's that whole joke that, yeah. You'll only find doctors
eventually. Sure, of course.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, you're the head of DEI 200, so that's a volunteer group of parents looking to make our district more diverse and equitable and inclusive. And you began this parent group. So, tell us how the group came together and what inspired you to organize it.
Yeah. So, I've actually been wanting to put it together for a really long time. So about 5 or 6 years ago, I actually started a little small business. It's closed now, so it doesn't exist anymore. But I started a small business called Some Streaky Box. And the purpose of it's a subscription box. And the purpose of the box was to deliver books about Indian culture to kids who live here in the United States. And the reason why I did it is because I really wanted to make kids who, you know, were like me and grew up like me, proud of their heritage. And so that was one of the ways that I thought, you know, that would help those kids. And I do think it really did well. I just was too overwhelmed to keep going with it.
Yeah.
But over the course of that, I met a lady named Sally Joshi, and she is the chair of a group very similar to DEI 200 called PDAC, Parent Diversity Advisory Council, in District 204, which is South Naperville.
Mm-hmm.
So after just kind of following her and watching what she had done, I'm like, we really need something like this here too. You know, like I think that we would definitely, you know, benefit from a group like this. And so while I've been trying to get it started for a couple of years, maybe even 5 years, you know, she Wow. suggested to try to get people to, like, you know, get a group of interested parents together. And then that's the way that you're going to start it. And I just struggled for a long time to find those groups of people.
Sure.
I think for a variety of reasons too, like a lot of people don't like to talk about some mm-hmm, of these things. Mm-hmm. You know, if you guys are familiar with the model minority myth, you know, like especially Indian and Asians, you know,
oh,
try
yeah.
to keep quiet about it a little bit. So, you know, people don't want to bring up this topic. But after last year, with, you know, the events that have transpired, there's this wave. And as the DuPage NAACP chair told me the other day, it's like, you have to ride it. So I basically, you know, took that passion and said, all right, guys, let's do something about it. And we got DEI 200 started.
That's wonderful.
That is awesome. Actually, I'm a co-chair of the DE&I initiative at my corporation. We're based out of Seattle. We have about 1,200 employees. We have an office in Atlanta. And after the George Floyd incident of 2020, it all of a sudden just shone a huge light on the need for diversity and equity and inclusion and how that needs to be top of mind and how that needs to be talked about and really explored, because as a nation, we tend to gloss over a lot. And
yeah, we
don't
want to look at the ugly parts.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And we tend to fall into the same old talking tracks. And we tend to, you know, I don't know. We don't like to sit in pain for long, and we tend to move on. Right. I don't know if that's just, you know, commercials being 30 seconds long, so our attention span is short, but we don't really dive deep on things. And we decided to go ahead and start this council within our organization because 1,200 employees, we have a lot of diversity. You know, we have a lot of Asians, we have a lot of you know, Blacks, we have a lot of Hispanics, right? The, you know, of course, we are a melting pot as well. So making sure that they have a voice, making sure that women's needs are met or their concerns are faced, and everyone needs to feel like they have a seat at the big table instead of the kids' table. And so it's, right. I think it's great that you've done this.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it. I actually started, I was able to start with the DE&I committee at work too, before I was able to do it, you know, get people behind it here, as far as the school district is concerned. And interestingly enough, like you mentioned at your corporation, you do have a diverse workforce. We actually don't have a diverse workforce. I am the complete opposite of, you know, the kind of typical employee that I work with. So it is even more important that we did it, but we really only got some passion behind it after George Floyd's murder.
Yeah. I mean, that was just from atrocious. I don't know, an optics standpoint, there couldn't have been a worse vision or demonstration.
You could not explain that away. You could not sweep that.
You couldn't explain away, but also that it was like the perfect, and unfortunately the perfect picture of what minorities feel. Yeah. Right. And it was shocking and harrowing and terrible. And it caused a lot of people to come to motion and to come to action. And thankfully, hopefully, you know, his sacrifice, whether he wanted to or not, hopefully will be the real impetus of change. Yeah. And that's what I'm hoping for.
I agree. And I also think it's important to recognize too, that there's a spectrum to racism, right? It's not just, you know, so police brutality, which is fortunate, you know, that I have personally never experienced. I'm not going to say no South Asians have, because I have heard of incidents, but I have not. But like, you know, what an Asian experiences versus what a Latinx experiences versus what a Black, you know, person experiences. And obviously nobody's is the same, but there's a wide range of it, from like macroaggressions to microaggressions. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that, you know, people haven't wanted to talk about it for such a long time and it makes them uncomfortable is one of the things that, you know, it's also a choice that I made, right? Like, I know that the more that I talk about it, the harder it is, the more uncomfortable I make people feel. And I can feel that. I can feel people, you know, pulling away because they don't like to have these types of conversations.
Sure.
But I basically had to make a choice in the last, you know, couple of years to say, well, am I going to just keep sweeping it under the rug, or am I going to like make sure that I speak my truth, you know, and let people know what's happening, instead of just kind of like pretending it doesn't exist.
You know, it's interesting. Kara actually has had, you know, I have family members who are police officers. I have very dear friends who were and recently just retired from the police force. I have nothing but respect for police officers, and I'm a huge advocate for
me
them.
Too.
Of course. I think we all are, right? I mean,
me as well. I mean,
right.
They put their lives on the line.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. But Kara does have an interesting story where when she was in Texas, a police officer thought she was Hispanic.
Yeah, because I'm mixed race. I've lived my entire life where people just project whatever race they either like or don't like on me. So, you know, I've had, you know, many abuelas come up in the grocery store and talk to me and then be so in Spanish and then be so disappointed when I'm like all this new generation. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm not actually, you know, I'm sorry. I'm not.
You don't speak Spanish.
Yeah, I don't come from a Spanish speaking family. They spoke Japanese a couple generations ago. Like this is, you know, it's, but because of that, I did have an incident in Austin where an officer was incredibly angry at me and called me racial slurs for a different race and clearly did not know. I mean, had profiled me before he pulled me over, and I hadn't experienced that before. But after I experienced that, I was like, oh, this is basically a microcosm. This is a tiny thing, you know, that many other brown and black people experience all the time. And it was super eye opening because, you know, the whole mantra of like, just do what you're told. I did everything I was told, but nothing. I was worried I was going to get pulled out of my car, maybe roughed up, and then put to jail. I mean, he was so angry. He like threw my license at me. Like he was, you know, expletives and racial slurs. And I don't know what had happened to him right before. And I still to this day don't know why he pulled me over, because when I,
you weren't like speeding or doing anything.
I wasn't speeding. I was turning into a shopping lot, parking lot, and had the green arrow that had just turned yellow. As far as I know, there was I had no taillight out. I had no, you know, hadn't cut anybody off to my knowledge. Like, you know, I still don't understand what happened other than what I look like. And so that was just incredibly eye-opening. And that happened when I was 23. So I've always carried that with me. When something else happens in the news, I'm like, yeah, I understand. Like, I mean, I don't understand the depth. I just understand that
it happens.
That it happens, and there's nothing you can do about it. And when someone's so irrationally mad or fearful or what, you can do everything they say, but they're just so agitated that there's really not a lot you can do. So it's very.
I'm so sorry that happened to you. Yeah, it just sounds very unfortunate, but it's something that, like, you know, we talked about a lot of people here, specifically Hugh and Wheaton, have talked about happening, and we've had some of the people, even with DEI 200, on our conversation, you know, talk about with the talking about race theories, and you know, especially like going out. Even I mentioned this recently too, but I was putting out yard signs at one of my supporters' houses, and was questioned. You know, which is a common thing for, you know, Asians especially, but like questioned if you belong, right? You don't look like you live here. And so we don't think you belong here.
Right.
And I was, you know, asked and questioned. And then when I'm like, no, I'm fine. They basically watched me for the next 5 minutes as though I was a criminal, you know, doing something awfully wrong. And I mean that, you know, we've been profiled a lot, especially after 9/11, being a brown family.
Yeah.
And even though we're not even Muslims, like you know, entirely targeted. But you know, what was important to me, and especially as I was putting my name up, let me go have a conversation with this guy. So I walked up to him afterwards and I'm like, look, I'm sorry, I got a little defensive, but you know, because we're brown, we're often asked if we belong and we're often asked these questions. And so that is why I got a little defensive when you came up to me after being there for 60 seconds and asked it. And his demeanor changed immediately as I kind of called out his microaggression.
Sure.
And he was like, oh, no, you know, best of luck to you.
Right. Now that he realized that, you know,
what he had done.
Yeah, absolutely. And how it was perceived.
Yeah. Also, though, I think that sometimes people feel they feel emboldened to do things without interaction, right? One of the things that drives me nuts about the internet is the anonymity of everything. And so, you know, you can be the best person in the world and the kindest person in the world, and someone, you know, behind the screen can just write the most horrible things about you. And it's when you actually have to confront people or talk to people. So first of all, kudos to you for actually helping that guy sit in a little bit of uncomfortableness. Because a lot of times people don't even understand when they are being aggressive.
Well, it's just second nature, and they haven't questioned how like terrible that question is to ask someone, or you know, that they're marginalizing someone because it's just their behavior they've done their whole life.
I mean, my daughter, she is, she looks more Asian than I do. I've always, you know,
She's quarter Filipino,
an eighth Chinese, and a whole gobbledygook of other stuff. And so, but she definitely, you're right. My kids are melting pots, really seriously melting pots. But, you know, she is, you look at her and you know, she's Asian. Like there's just something, you don't know exactly what, right? You can't like say, oh, she's Korean or whatever, but you can look at her and say, oh, she is Asian, of Asian descent. And, there was a Black Lives Matter peaceful protest here in DuPage where everyone was just standing on the side of the road, not even blocking traffic. They're just standing on the side of the road, holding up encouraging signs for Black Lives Matter. And a kid pulled up to her and screamed at her to go back to where she came from.
Right. And she's like, you mean DuPage? Because that's where I was born.
Right. Yeah. means like to the hospital,
right
to
my, down the street to, where I was born,
back into my mom's womb. That's weird.
I think that, I mean, it's so enlightening. And I will also mention that, you know, I've been talking about this a little bit recently too, with my own kids, because, you know, the difference between when I grew up, so I grew up in the Northern Burbs, right. Mm-hmm. And, I grew up where there was not anybody else of color around. We were the only, you know, Indian family. There was no Black family. There was no Hispanic family. We were the only ones. And so I very much know what it's like to grow up as the minority.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is that my parents don't, right? Because my parents, they grew up in India. They grew up being the majority, and they grew up being accepted. So they didn't quite understand how it felt to grow up where everybody kind of sees you as different.
As different,
right?
The other.
And, you know, I mean, up until high school, you know, I did have a friend that kind of changed my whole outlook on this, but I wanted to be white. Like, I really did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was so embarrassed of, and that's why I started that subscription box too, because I didn't want my kids to feel that way. And I didn't want other kids that felt, you know, were in that same boat to feel that way. But the interesting thing is that I know what it feels like, and I know what my kids are going through too. Yeah. Just like your daughter, where she said, you know, well, I'm from here. I'm not from anywhere.
Right.
Else,
right. Right. Absolutely.
And to tell us to go back to our country, like this is the only country.
This is our country.
Know.
Yeah, yeah.
This
and
is our country.
Absolutely.
Just as much a citizen as anyone else.
Yeah, I grew up outside of Dallas, so I had a lot of that. There was, the school was diverse. We had, you know, Hispanic kids, we had Black kids, we had, you know, we did have Asian kids, but there was still this, like, go back to where you come from. Like, you know, you're not from here, you know, you don't belong here. And, it's so interesting to hear about the difference between you and your parents too, because I hadn't thought of that, like how their upbringing would be different. My dad's Japanese, but he was born in Texas. So he also grew up in, you know, I mean, to this day, he's Asian with a Texas accent. Like this is him. This is America. Right? This is what happens sometimes. But, you know, and his parents were in the internment camp. So they had a whole other level of discrimination against them in California. So, but it's interesting and how to talk to your own parents when they're like, what is this? And they probably came here with the, you know, I mean, America's welcoming
American dream. Yeah.
Right. 100%. The American dream. It's, so, it's mean, for everyone. They don't say like not so, brown and Black people. They say American dream for everyone.
Yeah.
And I think it's that much more interesting too, because my parents made the conscious decision not to teach us Hindi because they didn't want us to have an accent because they, you know, the whole assimilation, right?
Yeah.
Like trying to get us closer to white culture, you know, to do that. And so it is just, again, I've been having all these epiphanies, especially running for school board, but like, you know, the idea of the fact that like, I understand exactly, you know, what my daughters, especially because my son is still young, but what they feel, right. I understand what it feels like to be, overlooked, right. And undervalued and all of those things. So it almost takes it to a different level. And I will say also for my son real quick here. And I know, you know, I love our teachers here. But we had a teacher that they were doing passports at school, right?
Sure,
so you can go visit different countries.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so on the passport, you had to, there was a space for your nationality where you write down your nationality. And can you guys guess what they put down for my son?
Oh, no.
They put Indian.
Oh,
he's been to India.
He's American.
He's never set foot in that country. And as a teacher, I would hope that they understand the difference between nationality and ethnicity. And I know, again, they meant no harm. He was fine.
Right.
But it just sheds a light to the fact that people with different skin color are seen as foreign.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's so heartbreaking. You know, it's interesting because, I mean, the vast majority of teachers are so open and amazing, you know.
I don't think she meant anything by it.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any bad intention. And I don't even think it's heartbreaking. I think it's just reality of how we're seen.
Yeah. Right. I agree. Well, you know, our kids too had a, you know, they had it like an Asian cultural day. My kids were kind of upset because they present as white.
Yeah,
they're white. Because they are a quarter Japanese, but they just, you know, that's how the genes work. They present as white. And they were upset because the focus was entirely on China. So there was very little on Japan. And, you know, their focus is, you know, Japan. And also they know how to use chopsticks and they know cuisine, you know, because we make our own sushi sometimes here. And we just have a lot of different, I mean, that's, I learned from my dad who learned from his mom and, you know, so.
And I'm fat, so I eat everything.
Right.
So we just,
right.
I mean, it is a smorgasbord over here.
So we just, you know, we do a lot of those things. And in class, a teacher asked the only Asian child what meals they like to eat at home, even though that Asian child happened to be adopted by two white parents.
Mm.
So put him on the spot. And meanwhile, you know, my daughter's like, we have all kinds of Asian food and we make sushi. And like, you know, I'd be a better person to ask, you know, but because the question was asked based on what they looked like, instead of opening it up to the class, you know
what I
mean?
There's such a fine balance with that, which I think is why, you know, we need those professional learning opportunities for our teachers, because in some cases they want to be asked and in other cases, you know, they don't like the spotlight on them. So it is a complicated topic.
Sure.
You know, and that's why we need to have things like the EI 200 to talk about.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's so important, you know, to talk about these issues and especially, you know, with our kids, with the new, you know, we mentioned earlier, the news has been so difficult. You know, how do you talk to your kids about diversity, about discrimination, about these issues? Like, you know, you don't want to scare your child, you know, into thinking the world's a terrible place. But so how do you approach these issues with your own kids?
So we actually, I mean, I would say number one is that, like, I think there's statistically lots of data out there that says that kids of color or families of color talk about race a whole lot more than people who identify as white.
Sure,
right.
I believe that.
So I think number one, it is important to talk about. Like, it is not a bad thing to identify somebody as, like, you know, the Indian child or the Hispanic child. I mean, obviously you don't want to generalize and sometimes be conscious of mislabeling somebody, right? But, like, I don't think that identifying us as Indian is a bad thing, you know, like, so we do talk a lot about it. We talk about it every day, and especially in the last year, we talk about it all the time. So, I will say my brother-in-law, who kind of has also guided my parenting style a little bit, when before I had kids and I saw him interacting with his son asked him a really complicated question or a question that required a complicated answer. And I expected the dad, my brother-in-law, essentially to, like, brush it off, right? I was like, oh, this is too complicated for you. I'll explain it to you later.
When you're older.
And
sure.
He didn't. Yeah. And he didn't. He actually explained it to him then and there. And my nephew digested what he could, right?
Sure.
And didn't digest what he couldn't.
Right.
But he took in what he could and he didn't. But that's been my approach ever since, whether it comes to talking about race or even, you know, academic subjects or anything else, right? Like government and whatnot. I explain it fully. We talk about it. And, you know, I mean, I don't really hold back. Like, even in front of my, you know, newly turned 7-year-old, he hears all of this conversation, right? He hears it all. He might not digest it all. He might not be interested in it all. But we talk about it because I think it's important. Kids are smarter than you think. We probably have the benefit that, you know, we aren't people who are targeted as dangerous, right? So they don't have to worry about being pulled over, generally speaking, right? Like, that's not something that is our reality. But they do understand, and I mean, they experience too, right? When they're walking down the street asking if they're lost. That's happened to us so many times.
Right.
So,
right.
But yes. They know. know. And then, my daughter, the last time it happened to us, my daughter turned around and be like, did she ask us because we were brown? And I'm like, shh.
And she says it really loudly.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So you know, it is something that I suggest that you talk about race. Right. Even actually with DEI 200, we've been starting to send out resources to all of the schools and all of the parents so that people can understand how to start talking about it, even with, like, toddlers, because toddlers can identify racial differences at, like, 2.
Yeah.
Right. So you can see them, and anybody who says that you can't, you know, is lying, essentially. Right.
Right.
Like,
right.
You see racial differences, you notice them. So it only makes sense to talk about them, but talk about them in the sense that, like, that's beautiful. And that's additionally what they bring to the table. And, you know, not everybody is treated the same way. Maybe that's an older conversation, but, like, you can start as young as toddler age.
Yeah. Wow. That's great to think about too. And I know, I think of some parents, I mean, I can't speak for white parents, but I'm sure there is some reluctance, some worry that they're going to get it wrong. You know, some worry that they're going to say the wrong thing, but sure. I think just trying to address it, you know, is important.
And also, you know, having those tips and advice, I think, is awesome.
Yeah,
it's right. Because it's so important. It's so important for families that are either of one race or of mixed race to talk about race. It's equally as important for families who are generally seen as white to also talk about race in an inclusive voice, not in one of derision or of separateness. Right. It's all about us being together. And, you know, cause you know, hey, you joke about Indians being seen as doctors and whomever, but if a white guy gets into a car accident and he goes into the hospital and the doctor's an Indian, he's not going to be like, well, no, I'm going to wait for Dr. Johnson, please.
Right.
Right. He's going to put his trust in the hands of that doctor, man, woman, black, white, brown, yellow, whatever, are going to get the best care because we're all part of this woven fabric that makes our nation. And so it is great that you're sending these tidbits out and this advice out, because these conversations have to, not only if they haven't been started, they really have to get started, and they have to be top of mind, because you have to be aware of who you are and where you're at and who you're with as a nation.
Right. Yeah. Well, And I also think that, I mean, our community, our nation is changing too, right? So like, you have to be aware of the different cultures and the different people that are a part of it. And that's why one of the reasons why I think about talking about this is so important, because, you know, even if we grow up in a small town where, you know, there isn't much diversity, our diversity is growing. And then also when you get into the big bad world, you know, there right. are people of every, you know, culture and look and everything like that, right? So like you said, when you get into that hospital, like, and you encounter somebody that you haven't encountered before, you have to be open to right. it, right? You have to understand that there's different experiences and different people, and it's what they also bring to the table, and not despite of the color of their skin. Mm-hmm. And I also think that it's just another tip that I'm going to mention too, is that if you look around and you look at your group of friends, your network of friends, the people you go to, you know, your church or your religion or whatever, your faith, right? And you go to your work and you go to your friend circle. If everybody looks the same, probably the best way to go about this is to look for somebody that looks different, right?
Right.
Like, I'm not saying you should just be their friends, but like, that's something that you should observe, that you, if you don't have a diverse circle, maybe that's something that you should work on.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it can start with adults too, so that you can model that, you know, for your kids as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
How do you encourage? Go ahead.
It's only beneficial for all, right? It's beneficial for you. It's beneficial for them. I mean, it's good for everybody.
Absolutely. Absolutely. How do we encourage, you know, our kids to be, you know, more inclusive and equitable, you know, in their own friend group? You know, what are some of the things you think we could do there?
I think that I think that comes a lot to like looking around and just trying to see the benefits to having a like different kinds of friends instead of just a group of friends that are all the same. I think with kids, you know, a lot of it, like you said, it's modeled from the parents,
sure.
right? I mean, a lot of their views, you know, now that changes once they get into, you know, they're adults, right? And then they start creating their own views. But a lot of it still comes from how your parents were raised you. So if the way that you are going to have to like show your kids to be more conscious of diversity is to be conscious of diversity yourself, and to expand your group yourself, and to encourage them to make friends with people that don't necessarily look like them, and see what other ideas that they can, you know, offer and how it can expand their worldview.
Yeah, that's so important. It's just so important, I think. You're absolutely right.
And I also think that, I mean, if you can afford it, if you can do it, travel.
Because travel is important too.
See, you know, that life experience for kids to see how other countries live, especially international travel, to see how other countries live or what those populations are like, or what those living conditions are like. It is that type of education, that type of experience, I think is vital, because, you know, I've been lucky enough to travel all over the world. I know America, in my opinion, is the best country in the world. I also know, in my opinion, we're not.
Right. And, yeah.
There's a lot of pluses we have, and there's a lot of minuses. And, you know, when you go and you travel over to England and you see, people who are not white can have English accents.
Right. Right.
Right. Or, you know, they can, they're going to the finest universities and they seem more
right.
inclusive. I mean,
yeah.
there are things that inherently or innately you're going to pick up
right.
without experiencing it.
Yeah. Have you guys ever heard of the danger of a single story, the TED Talk?
Yes. Yes. That is an amazing TED Talk. Yes. I love that TED Talk. It's so good.
Amanda, I'm not sure how to say her name, but like,
yeah.
Just the idea that like you have this, you know, people have an idea, and hers in particular was, you know, I can't remember what country she's from, but from Africa.
Yes.
Where, you know, they have a particular idea of what that looks like, you know, huts and people that are poor
she's
and
super,
impoverished
yeah.
and are not educated. And, you know, when she came to the U.S. and she was asked about her music and she provided Mariah Carey tape, her Minnesotan, you know, white roommate was very disappointed because she's like, that's not what I pictured.
Right. I had a single story about Africans and yes.
Exactly. Exactly. So I do agree, like traveling, and even if you can't afford it, right? Like that is also part of the benefits of looking at those diverse curriculum that DEI 200 is also, you know, pushing and the district is actually doing on their own too.
Yeah, that's great. Well, since you are running for District 200, you know, why did you decide to run and what do you want to do once you're elected? Fingers crossed.
Yeah. You know, interestingly enough, I actually didn't decide to run because of diversity, equity, inclusion, right? So like, I think a lot of people have this misconception that that is the reason that I decided to run. It's actually not. It is something I'm passionate about. And it's obviously come to the forefront more in this election than I anticipated that it would.
Sure.
And it's basically because our district in particular has never had a person of color, and I am the only person of color running.
Yeah.
You know,
which I still can't believe we're in 2021 and this is the case. Yeah. I mean, even in, you know, my Texas suburb that wasn't all that inclusive,
Your dad was on the school council.
Yeah, my dad was on the school board. So, as we're, you know, Hispanic members. So I still don't quite understand it, but that we've lasted this long. I don't understand it, but please continue.
Well, the fact that there's all these calls now for, you know, representation and diverse hiring staff, it's ironic to me that, you know, there's these calls for that, but yet they don't see the importance to have it on the school board.
Right.
So, you know, right. So it's so hard for me. And I'll say this too, like, it's been so mentally challenging for me to see that kind of, I'm just going to say it, like, hypocrisy.
Right. Yeah.
You know, yes. Diversity, equity, inclusion, but don't vote for Anjali. But diversity, equity, inclusion is hard. So, but that's not the reason I decided. It's become who I am. I'm now seen as the diverse candidate, and you know, that's all a lot of people see me as bringing to the table, which I actually think is really unfortunate. So, if people look beyond the color of my skin and beyond diversity and inclusion, which of course is, again, like I said, it is important to me.
Sure.
I'm also somebody who, you know, I decided to run because I have three kids in the system in all different levels of the school. I'm very invested and I see areas of improvement, right? So a couple of them, community engagement. I had no idea that the school board even existed a few years ago.
Yes, right.
I had no concept of it. I didn't know anything about it. And I didn't know that there was a place where people were deciding policies for the rest of the school.
Right. So it's not very well advertised. Yeah, you're right.
Not at all. I mean, the school doesn't talk about it. So I would constantly take my issues to the principal, right? And if he, you know, rendered his judgment, then so be it. But I didn't realize, you know what I mean? I thought there was another avenue.
Right.
And I think that we could definitely improve on that. There are so many people, and I'm not alone. There are other people that feel the same way, because when I talk to them that I'm running for school board, I see, you know, a gloss over their face. Like, what?
Like, what is that? So, yes.
Yeah, exactly. So I think we need to work on that. I think we need to work on our communication. You know, it's we just need to kind of enhance it, right? Like, there's so much, but also so little, all coming at the same time, sometimes incorrectly. And so we need to work on that. I actually have my degree in computer engineering. So I'm like in technology, especially in this pandemic, watching the kids, you know, go through remote learning has been obviously eye-opening in terms of a little bit how behind we are in terms of technology.
Yes, I agree. It's like dinosaur Chromebooks.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'd like to see the district move forward with some, not only using it for like district level logistics things, but also using it more, you know, properly in the classroom. So, and then just like digital responsibilities and, you know, content, authorship, all of that. So being aware of that. And then I think one of the things that probably was the most driving for me is this concept of student progress, right? I have three kids who, you know, do well educationally. And there are so many instances in which they're aware of the content before the content is taught to them, and they get so incredibly bored sitting in class.
Mm-hmm. Right? I agree. Sure. My daughter's same. It's a similar thing. Yeah.
And it is such a shame to me that like we can't do anything about that, right? Like that, you know, there is our PACE program. We do have an accelerated gifted program, which, you know, is great when you get in there, but there's certainly a number of kids that aren't in there, but are still really like not challenged.
Yes.
And so I would really love to see some more level-based content that allows kids to progress and like learn and constantly grow. So that is actually probably my number one driver, because again, academics is number one for me.
Right. And that's, important. It's so, so important too, because I have one child in the PACE, but that's just math and reading. So, you know, science came on later, but like, you know, social studies regular, you know, and then I have another child not in PACE, but A-plus student. So she just barely missed the cutoff. But she's just bored. Like the math and the reading, just bored. Like it seems like there's no real middle ground for them.
And I've heard that a lot. There's a ton of parents that are in that place where, you know, their kids are not quite PACE kids, you know, or they don't feel the need to push them into that for whatever reason, right? But there's just no middle ground for a lot of subjects. I mean, there are in some, but most of them they're not.
Yeah.
And so they're bored. And so I would love to see a little bit more attention to that, and you know, being able to meet kids, because kids also act up if they're bored.
Yes, right? They do. So, yeah. They get surly. They get moody. extra moody and extra surly.
That's why we have this podcast.
That's right. If only they weren't bored in class.
Yeah, right. So those are my primary goals and reasons. But I was also kind of told that I couldn't win, and I'm a person that likes a challenge. So
you're like, bring it.
Yeah, exactly. What was that? I can't win. Well, I'm definitely running.
Well, so basically, though, you know, you had shared before we started recording that the school board positions are not paid, but
yes.
Yet. Yep. You're still looking at working, did you say?
Like 40 hours a month?
20 to 40 hours a month.
20 to 40 hours a month. So 10 hours a week.
Yeah.
And not paid. And you're told that you're not going to win. So you're basically a glutton for punishment.
No. You got it.
Yeah. No, that's just dedication to education. That's what that is.
Dedication to education.
That's right.
So that's your hashtag, dedication to education.
Yeah. I guess so. I mean, I am just so passionate, right? Like, I mean, not only am I invested, but it's just who I am. You know, I understand it's unpaid, and I understand that, you know, I'm working against a whole bunch of obstacles here, but I really think that I'd like to make a difference. And either way, even if I don't make it, I'm going to continue to serve my community in the best that I can to try to, you know, make our world a better place.
And isn't that the American way, though?
That's right.
Like, yeah. Seriously, that's
our ideal. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, just from a guy on the sidelines, thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
Thank you for trying to ensure that education is equitable for everyone. And I'm not saying just from a DE&I perspective, I'm just talking about in general, you know, for being passionate about children and being passionate about education. And we all are, right? I mean, you ask any parent and they're going to say, yeah, of course I'm passionate about education. I don't want my kid to be a dummy. Right.
Right. Like, right.
You know, everyone,
live in this district because it's a good district.
Exactly. Yeah. I moved here because the schools are really good and all that. But a lot of people don't put their hat in the ring to actually try to affect change or to be a part of the progression of that education for their children. So kudos to you.
Yeah, I'm not one to sit back and complain about something. If I see something that's off and that there's something that I feel like I can do about it, step up.
That's just awesome. That's great. And you got our vote. You've got our endorsement.
Absolutely.
You've got our votes.
Absolutely. Yeah, you got an endorsement of two peeps on the radio.
That's right.
On a podcast.
That's right. And all the District 200 people, all the District 200 people listening, please go vote. April 6th.
And it's Anjali Bahadwa.
That's right.
Did I say it right?
Yep.
All right.
I did. Yep. Woohoo. I'm sorry. I'm terrible with names. But Anjali, you are, first of all, very impressive and awesome meeting you.
Yeah.
I think that it's been a delight, actually.
Yeah. Thanks so much for coming on. I mean, these issues are just so important, and it's just, you know, it's so good to think about in a different way. And also thank you so much for all that you've already done for District 200.
Yes.
I mean, DEI 200 is an amazing group and so important.
Likewise. I've enjoyed being here, and thank you for having these important discussions and like letting me tell my story a little bit. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, good luck. April 6th. We'll be voting for you.
That's right. That's right. Cast that ballot.
That's right. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
Wasn't she wonderful?
So great. So wise. You know, I mean, such insight.
Very engaging. So all those people, all you people out there who are involved in District 200.
Go vote.
Go vote.
April
6th. Come on. It's actually super important. Everyone on the school council has a tremendous amount of pull. And
they approve the budget. They approve the curriculum. Let's do this.
Yeah. So you know, you want to see changes in school. You want things to run better. You want things to be better in school. Pay attention to these elections.
Yeah.
Check out, they're important.
Yeah. Check out Anjali's website. That's ANJ4Education.com.
ANJ4Education.com.
Yes.
Check it out.
Yeah.
See what she's all about. And also check out the other people. Check out Brad Paulson. Great guy.
Yeah. Oh,
vote
for
him.
Yes.
And vote for Brad. Get him in there. And
vote for
Anjali. And whoever else you want. You know, there's lots of great people who are actually putting up their volunteered time to
indeed
try to make a difference for our schools, which is always, always appreciated.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, you know, of course, always visit us at whattheparent.com. If you have any questions, you have any concerns or comments, topic that you would like us to cover, send us an email at podcast@whattheparent.com. And, you know, we'll be happy to try to get, your points on the air.
That's right. That's right. In the meantime, I think we're going to try a new segment here.
New segment. A new end segment. All right. So
it's time for some dad jokes.
Well, cause those are the best jokes.
Well, it's also the case that he can't tell them in our house because the kids roll their eyes so hard they pass out. Even before he starts, hey, let me tell you a joke. Oh, bonk.
Yeah, it's like a bunch of epileptic seizures just happening all at once.
He loves to tell jokes so much. I got him a dad joke book, and every child at Christmas, why did you do that, Mom? Why'd you do that, Kara? Why did you do that? Why are you encouraging him? Don't encourage him.
Because it's awesome. Yes. Because dad jokes are not only funny, but they're relevant. Are they
relevant? Or are they just punny?
No. You know what they are? They're a parent. That's what they are.
Oh my. All right. So lay it on us. We're going to end with it. We're going to ending with dad jokes.
Ending with dad jokes. You guys ready?
Yeah. Lay it on me.
Oh, I was just waiting for him to say yes. All right. Hey, you hear about the two artists that had an art contest?
No. What about them?
It ended in a draw.
No. Oh! Ba-dum-ching! Now you can also tell that joke to your kids and make their eyes roll back in their heads.
That's
and then
true.
They might also faint.
I'll even throw in another one. Two drums and a cymbal jump off a cliff. Da-dum-ch.
Oh my. Oh. Hurts so painful. Good.
All right, guys. We'll see you next time. Thank you so much for joining. Thank you so much for listening to us and checking out Anjali and checking out our podcast.
Yeah.
We really appreciate all the support. Oh, and of course, I got to say, if you want to support us, Patreon. I'm always going to say that because I don't know how to
say it. Says it right.
Anyway, that thing, Patreon.
Throw us some cash.
Just get right to the point, why don't you? Just, you know, if you want to support us, that's one way to go. And then you'll get extra content. We got some crazy stories in there. Would love to, love to have you guys share. Don't share them because they're actually quite embarrassing. But yeah, it'll be
PJ's cool most embarrassing dream.
Cool to share with you guys. Anyway, hope you're all doing great. Can't wait to see you on the next show. And we'll catch you on the flip side.
That's right. See you next time.